seconds, 2 seconds. Riddell all the way outside to Watford. Three on the way. Oh! It went in! It went in! He puts it up on the left hand. No good. Tipped up. And no good again. Batted away. Tipped into Cody. Indiana's going to win it. They win it.
Yogi Ferrell. Will he take the big shot? Bryant is trying to post. It's Yogi. It's three. Got him all!
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to another episode of Podcast on the Brink, your weekly dose of Indiana University basketball news, notes, and nods to the past. I am your host, Jared Morris, and Podcast on the Brink, as always, is a joint production of the Assembly Call and Inside the Hall. Make sure that you have these two URLs bookmarked, assemblyhall.com/live and insidethehall.com. The first is the link to our live postgame show. You want to make sure that you have that ready for when the season starts so that you can join us after every IU game for expert analysis and fan reaction. And of course, make sure that you are visiting insidethehall.com once, twice, three times a day, even in the off season, to get your IU basketball news, because there is no better source for Indiana University basketball news than Inside the Hall. Well, this is episode number 138 of Podcast on the Brink, and we dedicate this episode to the 138 field goals made by this Indiana legend, and he's one of the all-time what-ifs in Indiana history. Certainly his senior season is, and I will tell you who that is after our interview today with Matt Dollinger of SI.com. We're going to break down the summer league performances of Troy Williams, Yogi Ferrell, Noah Vonleh, and Verdell Jones, and get Matt's expert opinion on their outlook for next season. We will get to that here in just a second. Before we do, I do want to remind you to use SeatGeek for all of your ticket needs this summer into the fall, and certainly come basketball season next year when you're looking for IU tickets. SeatGeek is definitely my ticket app of choice. And I like them for a number of different reasons. But, you know, one of the main ones is just that they're different and they're pushing the envelope forward. And they've got cool features like the deal rater so that you can see what the value is of the ticket that you're buying. Is this a good price to pay for the seat that you're getting? I also like the fact that there aren't a lot of hidden fees. I mean, when you get to the checkout, a lot of times you're actually paying less than what you think, because the cost that is cited of the tickets is the actual final cost, not the preliminary cost, and then you've got all of these extra charges on top of it. They actually estimate what your final cost would be, so you end up pleasantly surprised when you get to the end. And that, to me, is a company that cares about their users, they care about their customers, they want you to be delighted with your experience. They're not trying to pull the wool over your eyes and make a few extra bucks on you at the end. And so I really appreciate that. That's why I use SeatGeek. That's why Alex and I both think that you should use SeatGeek as well. And the nice thing about being a Podcast on the Brink listener is that you can actually get a rebate on your first ticket purchase. So here's what you want to do. You want to download the free SeatGeek app. You can do that on an iPhone or Android device, or go to SeatGeek.com. And when you create your account, there's a spot where you can add a promo code. And you want to add the promo code BRINK, B-R-I-N-K. And then when you make your first ticket purchase, you'll get that $20 rebate. So again, the free SeatGeek app or SeatGeek.com, add the promo code BRINK and get a $20 rebate on your first ticket purchase. Alrighty, with that said, let's jump right into this week's discussion. Matt Dollinger is here. Let's talk NBA Summer League and how all the Hoosiers did right now on Podcast on the Brink. And we're joined on this episode of Podcast on the Brink by the NBA editor for SI.com and former host of Podcast on the Brink, Matt Dollinger. How are you, Matt?
Hey, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me back again, guys. Appreciate it.
No, for sure. It's our pleasure. Obviously, the kind of the big news for IU basketball fans this week was the performance of Troy Williams, Yogi Ferrell, Noah Vonleh, and Verdell Jones out in Summer League. And we wanted to bring you on to talk about it because you were out there, right? You were in Vegas watching the games?
I was. I think I set a record. I was in Las Vegas for 8 days and did not come back broke. So that was a huge victory. And
very nice.
Yeah, there were a ton of Hoosiers out there. It was a nice little reunion.
So let's start out talking about Troy Williams, because I think he was the guy who ended up stealing the headlines, and you might not have expected that from his first game or two because it was pretty uneven, but boy, did he play well there at the end. And I actually had a chance to watch some of their semifinal game where they lost, but where he shot 14, 15 free throws, was attacking. I mean, it was a succession of good Troy plays. And now we're hearing a lot of positive buzz about him. So what were your impressions of Troy, and what are some of the things that you're hearing about his potential NBA future after how he did those last few games?
Yeah, you know, the Suns had one of the more fun summer league teams to watch in the first place with Dragan Bender, Devin Booker, Marquese Chriss, and honestly, Troy Williams. I mean, they, with Tyler Ulis as well. I mean, they had a stacked roster, so they were one of the most exciting teams out in Vegas. And Troy, for his part, did a great job of standing out amid some pretty good players. You know, much like, you know, his time at Indiana, he's a very streaky guy, but when he's on and when he's focused, you know, he can be one of the best players on the floor at any given moment. So we saw some of those performances later on, but, you know, at the summer league is like a weird in-between between college and NBA, and it's tough to get a really accurate judgment on how an NBA player is going to be based off what he did at summer league, but it's definitely a better judgment than playing in the Big Ten. And, you know, Troy's athleticism still stood out at the summer league level. His three-point shot was a little inconsistent, but he was really firing it confidently, which I think his coaches wanted to see. But the main thing coming from the Suns regarding Troy was that they really wanted to see his defense. And, you know, Earl Watson, their head coach, said that. The summer league head coach said that as well, that if Troy was going to make it, his defense was going to have to be his calling card. And that was there for bits and pieces. You know, I've always thought that Troy is more of a 3-4 than a 2-3. And I really think he's not going to be able to guard opposing shooting guards in the NBA. But against small forwards, he did pretty well. And overall, I think it was a good showing for him.
I mean, and some of what he did to kind of stand out, you know, the stuff in transition, driving to the basket, getting fouled from an offensive standpoint. You know, can you provide a little context on summer league? Like, how much would that translate to the NBA? Because I wonder if he would get some of those foul calls, or if he'd even have any of that space to move, you know, once you get into actual NBA games.
Yeah, there's some sloppy basketball being played out there. And, you know, Troy shooting 15 free throws was a result, a little bit of that. He definitely was aggressive, which is a credit to him. But also, you get 10 fouls when you're in summer league, so people are not afraid to get physical quickly out there. You know, I think for Troy, it's almost like doing less is more on offense. When he tries to take over games, that's when he tends to get in trouble and commits all the turnovers, and you kind of see the ugly side of his game. But if he's a catch and shoot guy from 3-point range, and he can, you know, shoot about, you know, hit a third of them, I think that's a big plus for him. And, you know, around the hoop, he really is athletic, and I've always thought that he plays bigger than 6'7", and that showed out there. He had at least one really nice putback dunk and a few plays in transition that were good. I think the problem for him is that Phoenix is not going to be a team most likely that works for him. You know, he can be signed by any team in the NBA, and Phoenix has a ton of young forwards right now with Dragan Bender and Marquese Chriss, as I mentioned before, but also a couple of good veterans. They signed Jared Dudley, who I'm sure they wanted to play minutes this year, and PJ Tucker, who's another veteran who is there as well. And also, I'm blanking on his first name, but Warren, who's a guy who played a little bit last year. So with that kind of depth at forward, I'm not sure he's going to be able to catch on there, but I do think that he showed enough for a different NBA team to be interested. Maybe he starts off in the D League, plays a little bit back and forth, but to Troy's credit, I think he did a good job of capitalizing on an opportunity at Summer League.
Can you explain real quick what actually happens next? So it's training camp, and guys can get like a guaranteed invite to training camp and non-guaranteed invites to training camp. Is that right? Like, what's next for these guys?
Right. You can get both kind of offers. And right, Troy is now waiting for a call, hoping another team came away impressed. You know, we saw this with Christian Wood recently. He played for the Sixers summer league team and stood out well, and ended up getting signed by the Hornets while he was out in Vegas. So I think Troy's going to hope for a similar situation. The good news is that, you know, the fact that he was undrafted, the fact that he can sign, you know, a contract from scratch and doesn't have to fit in, you know, certain parameters. We've been seeing a lot of NBA teams kind of take chances on, pet project prospects a little bit and sign these guys to longer term deals, you know, 3 or 4 years at a time, because the salary numbers are so good. I mean, you guys have seen the amounts of the amounts of dollars the NBA has been handing out this summer. I think Miles Plumlee got paid $52 million yesterday. To be able to sign a guy like Troy Williams and you know, roll the dice for $1 million a year is definitely worth it to an NBA team. So I think if Troy does get signed, we could see him get a multi-year deal, which is really good for his development because, you know, he's definitely far away from a finished product, but the raw tools are there, and they've always stood out on an NBA level, knowing he can do a few things really well. So I think, you know, given what he showed in Vegas, we could see him on an NBA roster next year or at least make a cameo on one.
Matt, the last time we talked to you was before the draft, and I'm curious your reaction to both of those guys not getting drafted and whether or not that was actually a better development for them to not be picked. Because if I'm understanding it correctly, if they would have been second-round picks, it would have been a different situation where the team would have owned their rights through, I guess, training camp, and then they would have had to make a decision at that point. I guess what's the difference between a guy being picked in the second round, and was it better for both of those guys to not be picked potentially?
Yeah. I think it's opposite for the two. For Troy, I think it was a blessing in disguise. And, you know, I remember this is probably 5-7 years ago now, the Pacers traded 2 second round picks for James White and to take him in the second round. And I remember they were high on him going into the draft, and he ended up not making the regular season roster. They cut him beforehand, so he was locked into the Pacers, though, throughout all these weeks and months leading up to the season, and other teams really couldn't get as close of a look. So I think the fact that Troy is essentially a free agent in that regard is a good sign, because, you know, the other teams have maybe aren't thrilled with what they've seen in their, out of their summer league guys. Troy stood out, you know, having 2 20-point games in Vegas. Maybe they'll take a flyer on him. Yogi, on the other hand, you know, he participated in so many pre-draft workouts. You know, everyone got a good look at him, and, you know, everyone saw exactly what he could do for 4 years at Indiana as well. There isn't a lot of intrigue or questions with him. I think teams think they have him scouted pretty well at this point, and unfortunately, he didn't have a great showing in Brooklyn. They have, you know, they had a deeper backcourt as well. They also have some options at point guard next year, and he shot pretty poorly from 3-point range, which I think, you know, he really was going to have to shoot Jordan Hull's like out there to kind of get a chance on an NBA team. So, you know, for Yogi, I think he could be a guy that's maybe will bounce around overseas for a little bit, but still could get a shot at the NBA. But I think he's going to have to build a little bit more momentum for him to catch on with the team.
So, I asked this question yesterday on Twitter, and I just want to get your – I think I know what you're going to say, but to me it seems like right now that Troy is more likely to make an NBA team than Yogi. Is that safe to say?
I think so, yeah. You know, there's so many – point guard is a deeper position as well. I think it's a little tougher to stand out there. You can find a lot of guys who can kind of be floor generals. You need someone who has a couple of skills that really stick out above that. Is he a lockdown defender? Can he really shoot from deep? Those are the two things that Yogi's going to have to do for him to kind of stand out among the competition. And Troy, on the other hand, you know, there is a big need for NBA teams for two-way wing players, and there aren't a lot of those guys around the league, period. So even a prospect, someone who could potentially be one of those, is a pretty valuable commodity at this point. And Troy definitely projects potentially as a 3-and-D guy. You know, he only shot 26% from 3-point range in summer league. It's not like he's lights out from there by any means. But you know, I continue to think that his jumper looks better and better every time I see it. It's amazing how much arc he has on it right now. I mean, the combination of his high release point and his vertical, and then shooting that ball, it's almost like up at the shot clock right now at its peak. So I think he's got the potential to really hone it though and to get better, and maybe a year or two of experience will help that. And I think NBA teams see the potential there.
The contract situation is another thing I'm curious about. So let's say Troy gets an offer from an NBA team. What's the most likely scenario of how that would work? Would it just be a couple of years where they'd say, hey, we're going to give you, like you said, $1 million a year for these 2 years, but you may play these 2 years in the D League? Is that typically how something like this would work?
Yeah, I mean, he's hoping for NBA guaranteed money, and if that's the case, then he'll get paid an NBA salary still while he's in the D League. So that's really the best case scenario for him. If, you know, no team is interested, like I said, in a multi-year deal, which I do think is still the most likely option for him, given his strong showing and, like I said, the lack of 3-and-D guys, then, you know, he goes on a non-guaranteed situation to camp, and if he makes the roster, they'd pick it up. But things do get a little trickier there, and I think worst-case scenario for him would be if no NBA team is interested, then he ultimately signs a D-League deal. The money there is really tough. They made it slightly better going into next year, but it's pennies compared to what he could be making overseas. So then, if there is no NBA team interested, he would have a tough decision. You've seen guys like Hulls and Christian Watford in recent years go overseas, and it's a good way to make a living, and you make a lot more money than you do in the D-League. So I think he could have a tough decision there and kind of decide if he wants to stay stateside and try and make it midseason, or if he's going to, you know, take the money and go overseas and play abroad for a year.
Matt, regarding Yogi, let me play devil's advocate just for a minute, just for sake of discussion. I mean, do you think that just summer league, the format of it, lended itself a lot more to Troy showing off what he could do than Yogi showing off what he could do? I mean, obviously the shooting isn't good, but we've seen enough of Yogi to know that he's going to be able to make shots with enough time. You know, but I just wonder, on that Brooklyn team without a lot of really good players, was it going to be hard for him? Was the deck kind of stacked against him anyway to show what he can do? Or do you think that he really underperformed maybe what the expectations were and what he should have or could have done?
Yeah, you know, I think it was a little bit more of the latter. I think he didn't quite play up to his usual standard out there. And, you know, there's a lot of things that can contribute to it, but I do think summer league favors guard play. So I don't think he was at a disadvantage by any means out there. I do think that, you know, he is, you know, a little bit what you're getting at is he's used to being the leader of a team, and kind of being a guy on the end of the bench is a very different, you know, position and dynamic for him. I'll admit, watching him sit on the bench for long stretches during the games was a little bit jarring for me, because I'm so used to seeing this guy on the floor. I can barely recall any moments in Indiana when I watched him on a bench kind of watching the action. So, you know, I'm sure that's different for a player as well. You know, he's not used to playing in 5-minute spurts. He's used to playing the entire half. So it's tougher to find your rhythm a little bit. And, you know, kind of like a relief pitcher or something, it's tough to be called upon when you're used to starting games. And, you know, Yogi, for the most part, when he was playing for the Nets the past week or two, was playing in those short spurts and was trying to impress people and stand out in a short period of time. And you see a ton of that at summer league, with guys trying to do way too much when they get their number called. And it's natural. What do you expect them to do? They're playing for jobs. Of course they're going to try and go above and beyond when they get a shot. So, you know, one thing I thought Yogi did a great job was being aggressive. He really, you know, shot the ball consistently when he was on the floor. He was not trigger shy or anything. Some games he made some more, you know, I think he was 4 of 5 one game, but another one he was 3 of 11. So, to me, it comes back to the 3-point shooting for him. For a guy who's around 6 feet tall to be successful in the NBA, he's going to have to be lights out from deep. And if he's getting open looks, he's going to make them. And he missed a good amount of those while he was in Vegas. And they are shots I'm used to seeing him make, and maybe he would make it in a different week, but on the big stage, unfortunately, they didn't go down for him.
Let's talk briefly about the other two Hoosiers who are in summer league, starting with Noah Vonleh, who now in his third year still hasn't graduated yet from being a summer league type player. How did he play, and what do you expect from him this season?
Yeah, I think we're going to see at least another year of Noah Vonleh, the prospect, out in Portland. You know, the Blazers added some depth in the front court this offseason, to the point where he's not going to be able to get significantly more minutes there. If anything, he's going to be fighting for the same amount out in Portland. Portland kind of made a jump this year from a nice little story to wanting to be a serious playoff team, and they added some veterans, and they're just more ready than Vonleh right now. So I think Portland still really likes him, but I'm not sure he's earned the trust right now to play big minutes. We saw some of the same inconsistencies out in Vegas. You know, he struggled with foul trouble a little bit in one game, you know, a little erratic shooting from the floor. His body has come really far since he's been in Indiana, and I think that's been the most impressive thing, the fact that he's filled out his frame. But like you said, he's 20 years old, and there are guys who are rookies that are older than him out at summer league and in the NBA. So it is a little weird. He's going into his third season, but he's, you know, he could easily be judged as a rookie right now. And I do think being in the NBA the past 2 years has probably been a more valuable experience for him than having 2 more years in Indiana. The physical growth has been big. Trying to adapt to the game and the physicality of opponents is good. But, you know, the ultimate guy to I always go back to for this when you're kind of judging Summer League versus the NBA is Jimmer Fredette, because every year Jimmer Fredette dominates Summer League and it's like, oh my God, how can this guy not be on an NBA team? And then you watch him during the season, you're like, he's not quite good enough to be on an NBA team. And Vonleh's stuck in that middle spot right now where he's a standout against Summer League competition. He's not quite good enough against NBA guys right now. And I wouldn't, you know, read too much into that. I think it's mostly the fact that he's 20 years old and that he's still learning the game. And I think learning against those other Blazers bigs this year in practice will help him a lot.
Matt, on Vonleh, you've already seen Charlotte trade him away. Now he's going into his third season, his second in Portland. But with the way the NBA salaries are structured now, I would assume in a couple of years, I'm not sure exactly how long the rookie contract lasts, there's going to be a point where Portland's going to have to decide if they want to invest in him. You know, at what point does he go from prospect to guy that actually needs to produce or show some consistency in order to warrant the contract that he's going to receive based on where he was picked in the draft?
Well, the good news is that the NBA is really, you know, opening the wallets for big men right now, whether they're proven or not. You know, Myers Leonard, a teammate of his, got $41 million this offseason. You know, I just mentioned Miles Plumlee, the second best Plumlee in the NBA, took home $52 million. And, you know, you guys are familiar with his game. He's a solid role player. A couple of years ago, he's not the kind of guy you'd expect to be getting $52 million a year. So I think Vonleh's positioned well for when he hits free agency. Regardless, I think, you know, with 2 years left to go before, I think he'd be an unrestricted free agent. He's got, unless they go very poorly for him, which I don't imagine they will, I think he's going to get, you know, definitely some interest. This combination of skills and age right now, I really don't think, you know, he's going to kind of submarine or torpedo his stock or anything by any imagination. But the Blazers have this front court logjam, which is going to be a little tricky for him with, you know, they already have Myers Leonard there, as I just said, who they paid. They brought in Festus Ezeli from the Warriors, who could potentially, you know, be a starter. Mason Plumlee is there as well, who's probably the incumbent starter going into the year. And then they also have Chris Kaman and Al Farouk Aminu, who they want to play at the four a little bit, and Mo Harkless. It's a deep front court. So Vonleh's got some stiff competition. The minutes aren't going to come easy for him, but as long as he kind of remains a bit of an unknown and has some intrigue and has shown flashes like this in Summer League, I think he'll be an intriguing prospect to NBA teams.
We had Verdell Jones on a recent episode of Podcast on the Brink, and he shared with us his story of, you know, bouncing around a few places in Europe and then making it to the D League last year and really playing better than a lot of people probably expected. He was in the Summer League. How did he do? And any chance that he catches on next year?
Yeah, you know, so Verdell was played for the D League Select team out there, which is kind of you know, the all-star group of D League players who didn't get an invite from a different NBA team for Summer League. So that kind of tells you where he's standing in NBA talent evaluators' eyes right now. And unfortunately, he didn't play particularly well when he was out there. He only got to play meaningful minutes in 2 games. The other two, he pretty much rode the pine. So I think for him, it's going to come back to, can he prove himself in the D League again this year, and will he get called up? Unfortunately, out in Vegas, he didn't get too much of a tryout. You know, the same thing for Vonleh, I'll say about Verdell. The physical transformation he's undergone is surprising, too. I mean, I just remember this green bean from Indiana who, you know, we'd hear stories about him eating pizza after pizza and not being able to put on any weight. And he has finally been able to put on some weight and filled out his frame. I think he's less of a point guard now and more of a wing player. But, you know, for him, he's just going to have to become a three-point sniper for him to make it. He's going to have to go from a good three-point shooter to a great one for him, I think, to ultimately, if he's going to make it to the NBA.
Yeah, and he even mentioned on that episode of Podcast on the Brink that he saw the D League as a one, maybe a two-year thing, you know, to take his shot. And then otherwise,
right,
you know, Europe would probably be the better option just because of the money. Final question for you, Matt. Any update on the health of the kid that Victor Oladipo dunked on? Has he recovered?
Oh, no. Yeah, I'm worried about him. That's a good question. I haven't heard any updates. I just keep hearing the screams in the background of that vine over and over again. So Someone should check on him. Someone should. I don't know. Bozich, you should get on that. Or, I don't know, hit up Rosenstein. Maybe he can go track him down.
Hey, Matt, quickly, thoughts on Victor Oladipo in Oklahoma City and what that's going to be like? I mean, there's a lot in flux there, obviously, with Kevin Durant leaving and the uncertainty around Russell Westbrook. Ultimately, is that going to be a good situation for him?
Yeah, that was a probably a pretty emotional week for him to go from playing with Westbrook and Durant to playing for the Durantless Thunder and kind of wondering, what's the future of this team exactly? You know, I really liked the fit for him in Oklahoma City when I saw Durant on the floor. You know, the way NBA defenses have to kind of strategize for him, I thought Oladipo was going to be able to take advantage a lot. Him and Westbrook without Durant is a slightly different beast. They're a little bit redundant. You know, they're both wildly athletic guards who are better with the ball in their hands and can drive to the rim. You know, Oladipo is not going to benefit a ton from Westbrook drives when he kicks it out, because Oladipo isn't much of a catch and shoot player. But, you know, with Durant gone, that's 30 points per game almost that are missing. And Oladipo is going to get a chance to replace some of that. But they're going to have to undergo a little bit of a transformation this offseason, because they're going to be a very different team. They're still pretty good up front with Steven Adams and Enes Kanter. But as far as the wing and as far as on the wing right now, that's as big a shoes to fill as any in the NBA. So I think Oladipo will potentially be a starter for the Thunder. I think you could also see him play some six man like we did in Orlando. But I think this is a big year for him. I think he's going to learn a lot from Westbrook. I think those two are going to become pretty close, hopefully. And if there's probably no better mentor for him in the league than Russell Westbrook. So we have to see that as a positive, I think.
Unless he ends up not playing with Westbrook either, if they trade him, which would
then it becomes the Victor Oladipo show, and that's a entirely different story altogether there. But with Billy Donovan and some other young prospects there, I still think that could be a better situation than for him than he was in Orlando.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt Dollinger, thank you very much. We always appreciate your insight, and you're always welcome here on Podcast on the Brink.
Hey, thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Yep. Take care.
All righty, I'll see you.
All right, our thanks to Matt Dollinger for joining us on this week's episode of Podcast on the Brink, and obviously we wish our best to Troy, Yogi, Noah, and Verdell as they move forward this season with their basketball careers. One more quick reminder, make sure that you go to assemblycall.com/subscribe, join our email list so that you get our six-banner Saturday news roundup of IU basketball news, and make sure that you keep it tuned to insidethehall.com every day for the latest updates on IU basketball. Well, earlier I told you that this was episode number 138, and we dedicate this episode to the 138 field goals made by Landon Turner in the 1980-81 season. That, of course, was the season that resulted in Indiana's fourth championship banner, and Landon Turner obviously had a huge part to do with it. And Landon's greatness went back before his Indiana career. He was a standout basketball player. He started at Indianapolis Arsenal Tech High School. He became the school's all-time record holder in rebounding. During his junior year, Tech won the city championship, and the following year they were sectional and regional champs. And he was a big-time recruit for Indiana. He was named to a number of All-American teams. He was the only player from the state of Indiana that year to play in the McDonald's All-American game in 1978. And at the annual Indiana-Kentucky All-Star game, he was the top scorer, scoring 23 points, going 11 of 14 from the field. So it shows you what kind of a recruit he was. Now, obviously, Landon didn't set the world on fire his first couple of seasons in Bloomington. As a freshman, he averaged 5.5 points and 3.4 boards. As a sophomore, he averaged 7.4 points and 4.4 rebounds. And he was a guy who was known to spend some time in Bob Knight's doghouse, we will say. But he busted out of it in a big way in 1981. And it was kind of right after, you know, and Landon has told the story many times, right after Bob Knight, you know, gave him one last chance to prove that he could contribute. And he did. Landon responded with a 4-5 performance against Northwestern. And adding him to that lineup, which was already so potent with guys like Isaiah Thomas and Ted Kitchell and just so many different players on that team that were standouts, you know, adding a guy like Landon Turner, that level of athlete, one of the more talented players, was huge. He went on to reach double figures in 9 of his last 11 games. Indiana won their last 5 regular season games and earned their second straight Big Ten crown. And then, of course, we know what Indiana did in the tournament, just blowing through the NCAA tournament that year. Now, unfortunately, we all know how Landon Turner's story ends, and it is tragic. He was obviously on the rise heading into his senior season, and that junior year, he averaged 9.5 points and 3.7 rebounds, but his performance in the NCAA tournament, where he was just dynamite in the Final Four, he was named MVP in the semifinal game and was named to the all-tournament team, had everybody really high on what he could do his senior year at Indiana and then possibly on into the NBA after that. But on his way to Kings Island in Cincinnati, Landon lost control of his vehicle and crashed in an accident that left him paralyzed from the chest down. Landon did eventually graduate from Indiana in 1984, of course, went on to play wheelchair basketball. He was named an honorary All-American by the U.S. Basketball Writers Association and received the Most Courageous Athlete Award in 1989. And I just remember as a kid going to IU games in the early 90s, and you would always see Landon over there on the sidelines in his wheelchair. Has just become such an inspirational figure for Indiana basketball. And so it is my honor to dedicate this episode of Podcast on the Brink to Landon Turner. A big tip of the cap to you, Landon. His senior season, obviously one of the great what-ifs, and really his future basketball career, one of the great what-ifs in Indiana basketball history, because it sure seemed like he had turned whatever corner he had struggled to turn in his first few years, and was ready to make good on all of that promise. But he didn't do it on the basketball floor, but he's done it in other ways by serving as an inspiration. And so our tip of the cap to you, Landon Turner. All right, everybody, that wraps up this episode of Podcast on the Brink. And I do have a quick note. This is going to be the last episode of Podcast on the Brink for a little while. We are going to take August off, both just because it's a slow time in terms of basketball news and because my wife and I are expecting our first child. So the next time I talk to you, I will be a new father, which I can't wait for. So we figured it would be a good idea to focus my attention here at home as opposed to on IU basketball for a few weeks. But we will be back in early September with new episodes of Podcast on the Brink. So enjoy this month. Hopefully there are no big news stories that warrant us getting on here and doing an emergency episode, because chances are those would be bad stories. So hope that you don't hear from us for the next month, and then we will pick back up where we left off with the next episode of Podcast on the Brink in September. We'll talk to you then, everybody.